welcome into What in God's Name. She's Shayna Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
We're doing current events and culture from a philosophical and theological point of view. Shayna, it's great to see you.
Chris, it's good to be seen. How are you feeling?
I am feeling good enough. How about
good
you?
Good enough.
We'll do it for today. A couple of show notes for our listeners. Shayna, next Thursday and then the Thursday after, we're going to play the show that we co-created with our live audience earlier in February.
Yeah, that was the live audience that gathered together for a weekend of workshops. We had a terrific group that day, and I'm really looking forward to hearing the final production, Chris. No pressure, but you know.
No pressure. It's going to be really good. In April, Shayna, we have an interview that I did with Dan Andrus. Dan is the fire chief in our capital city, Concord, New Hampshire. And it was a delightful conversation. Dan is a beautiful soul. And you will enjoy
hearing that. I am looking forward to hearing that.
You and I will have some conversation about it afterwards. All of you, our listeners out there, you should be looking forward to those shows coming up for us. So today we want to take this story of the college admissions scandal. It's timely, and it really lends itself to the kind of analysis, the kind of perspective that we are taking on current events and culture. To recap, basically a gentleman, a man, headed this service, private college counseling, getting people, kids into elite colleges, basically by accepting bribes and then making bribes to college testing proctors and to college athletics coaches, mostly is what I'd say. But it was basically a bribery scheme.
Yes. A bribery scheme that involved USC, Yale University, among many colleges, where parents were involved in a payola scheme to get their kids into schools, a cheating scheme.
Yeah. When I first heard about this, I said to my wife, Shayna, I said, how unsurprising this is.
Mm.
A lot of the news that I've read about this, it takes the angle, people are telling the story of how, this is a story of how wealthy people are gaming the system. And certainly that's an angle you can take on this story. The story I see is a story of a deep hollowness, a deep hole, a void that is in our culture so deeply that people want to fill. And so I'm thinking, then this is a sympathetic reading of these parents now who are, it's just a kind of this race to nowhere idea of, somehow, if I can get my kid into an elite school, that this void, this gap, this deep desire that's unfulfilled, I don't know how to fill it. Oh, it can be filled with a big name of a college, or, you know, prestige of some way. Just this,
like a thing that needs to be constantly fed and is never full.
And it's never satisfied.
It's never satisfied.
And that, to me, is the deep spiritual. That's a spiritual story. And I think it's just rampant in our culture.
But, and wow, Chris, that is so much more compassionate than what I first heard. What I first heard was a story of entitlement. People who think that, or have been led to believe that, they are entitled to something. Their children are entitled to it. And if they can't get it on their own merits, then they're going to buy their way into it because it is theirs for the taking. And I think the cage that gets rattled in that is you know, the cage of integrity.
Yes.
Which is the one thing that seems to be lacking in all of this. And frankly, yeah, that as a spiritual dis-ease, as a manifestation of a spiritual dis-ease, I can get to where you are on that. But congratulations for having started there.
Well, but entitlement is entitlement can be the ugly face of that. Like, I deserve this. The world owes me this. And I think that spiritual need can take that ugly face, and then it's a lot less sympathetic.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But I feel like it's part of the same spiritual dis-ease in our culture.
But I think also, I mean, what you're identifying really goes more at the source and is potentially more helpful. It's a more helpful way of looking at it because, you know, it is sympathetic. And if we want to be builders of a kingdom of God in which, you know, all people are kin, then we're going to have to at least start in that place of sympathy, which you've painted a fairly sympathetic picture. So let's run with that.
Well, I mean, I want to come also around to acknowledge the justice element of this, because there are people who playing by the rules who have been hurt.
Oh yeah.
Right. So, so even if we, even if I'm
on many different playing fields right now, people playing by the rules who are absolutely getting clobbered.
Yeah. 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 We have to keep both in focus. Like, you can't just have total compassion. It's like, oh, those poor folks who have an ache in their soul and we just forgive them. No, there's a real price to be paid, and there's pain that they have caused by their action.
You know, again, the word that keeps coming back to me over and over again is integrity.
Yeah. Tell me more about integrity from your perspective. And when you think of the word integrity, what images come, what definitions come?
At its bare bones, I would suggest that integrity is when the tongue in your mouth and the tongue in your shoes are walking in the same direction. You know, that I say X and I do X. Now, that having been said, one could say, clearly, I'm a dirtbag and I care for no one and nothing. And I behave like a dirtbag who cares for no one and nothing.
And so in that
would
sense,
we then say that person is operating with integrity? You know, well, on the one hand, I guess we would. And I want to think that integrity also has, therefore, another component to it, which is free from any sort of malfeasance.
Yes.
And which understands the interconnectedness not only of each to each and each to all.
The conversation you and I have had so far spurs me to want to reflect on the connection between what I started with and what you've brought in terms of talking about integrity. So my picture of the human being is that we have this desire. It's just the way we're made to, and there's a gap, there's something missing in the human being that needs completion. And we look for it in so many ways in life. We're always looking. And idolatry is when we find something that we think can fill it, but really doesn't have the power to make us whole the way we desire to be whole.
And in fact, leads us further and further
astray
from that which might ultimately fill that.
And so if we find, from my point of view, the only thing that can fill us is God. Mm. It's the God desire. Somehow, Shana, there's a connection between that and living a life of integrity. I think, I intuit that, I can't spell it out.
And for, you know, our listeners who are non-theists, potentially the notion of love, interconnectedness, that ultimately will save us in the end. Because without that, my God, we are just hosed 12 ways to Sunday. You know, I'm thinking, I can't, even in the context of this conversation that we're having, Chris, I can't help but I keep getting thrown back to the testimony of Michael Cohen in front of the House a number of weeks ago, and what a circus that was. And the people ultimately who lose in this, the American people, the Constitution, the democracy, you know, all because now everybody's got a party line. Everybody's running off on their individual line, and nobody can come back to center.
Here's where I will take my role as the less
dissenter,
hopeful.
Dissenter. And
the less hopeful of the two of us, which is politicians are not leaders. And this is where Andrew Breitbart was right on the money. Politics is downstream of culture. And the politicians are going to be the last ones to come around on integrity or on courage. We have to develop a culture that rewards that, and then the politicians will get it.
I don't know. Something may be shifting there. I mean, I do think you're right. It certainly has been the case that politics up until this point is way downstream of culture, and the culture has gotten ugly. And in part because of this degradation of this notion of integrity. I mean, we just don't, not only don't we value it, but I mean, you know, I think about that saying, no good deed goes unpunished. You know, not only don't we value it, but we think of people who would engage ethically and morally and kindly and compassionately as chumps, as people to be taken advantage of. They're easy. They're pushovers. They're naive.
Yes.
They're simple.
Right. And so part of
can you imagine if Jesus showed up today and started? My God, would he face any less blowback today than he did 2,000 years ago?
No. So this is where I'm not a big believer in progress.
Yeah. Well, and for once, I'm going to have to get dragged into the trench with you, Chris.
I wanted to. Wanted to read to you this. This is a piece from David Brooks' column in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago.
On the Conan, that was a great column.
So you remember this? Because it does relate again to this college story.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
Which brings us back full circle. I wanted to close one of my thoughts with regards to when I was talking about idolatry and connect that to this college story. The idols are Stanford,
Harvard,
Georgetown, Yale. Those are the idols. Like, if we can just get our kids in there, then we are saved. This is David Brooks. He says, I often wonder who did not love Donald Trump. I often wonder who left an affection void that he has tried to fill by winning attention, which is not the same thing. He's turned his life into a marketing strategy. As Michael Cohen said in his testimony on Wednesday, even the presidential campaign was a marketing campaign to build the Trump brand. In turning himself into a brand, he's turned himself into a human shell, so brittle and gilded that there is no place for people close to him to attach. His desperate attempts to be loved have made him unable to receive love. Imagine what your own life would be like if you had no love in it, if you were just using people and being used. Trump, personifying the worst elements in our culture, is like a providentially sent gong meant to wake us up and direct us toward a better path. Nonetheless, his kind of life has an allure for other lonely people who also live under the illusion that you can win love and respect with bling and buzz. Michael Cohen was one of these people. He testified that in serving Donald Trump, he felt he was serving a cause larger than self. Those causes were celebrity and wealth.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Totally
no less powerful the second time I'm hearing it.
Totally penetrating insight into our culture. And both of the things that we've talked about today, this college scandal, is all about trying to fill this emptiness with something that really is not ultimately going to satisfy.
Well, and the one thing that David didn't talk about, but which I tend to think is a significant player in all of this that hasn't been named, is fear.
Oh my gosh, so true.
The role that fear plays and our response to fear.
Which is deeply theological.
Very deeply theological. But in our current society, there is a ton of fear as the system continues to erode on so many different levels. And we see fear may be integrity's biggest enemy.
When fear kicks in, we're by definition in self-preservation mode, defeat the threat. And, you know, as we talked about integrity involves us being able to consider the whole.
And more connected. And the challenge is that while, you know, reaching out under threat can be counterintuitive, going to the fear place and feeding the fear machine is counterproductive. And it will take you down the drain and further down the drain. And I'm getting back to your piece, I think, here about idolatry. You know, what the thing about worshiping idols is not that is actually an attractive alternative. You don't you don't ultimately, I mean, if worshiping the false idol paid off, then it wouldn't be a false idol. You know, it would be an alternative. But what makes it the worship of false idols, what makes idolatry a sin, if you will, using, you know, that really traditional language, is that it just, it takes us further and further away from God. It takes us further and further away from the core of who we are meant to be as people, and it creates breaks in the interconnected web of humanity and all of creation.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine some light.
This we do every week on our podcast, What in God's Name. You can find us by Googling What in God's, WHATINGODS.
We will be with you again next Thursday, as I say, with the live show that we recorded in New Hampshire in February. See you, Shana.
See you, Chris.